Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons, and all of the new subscribers. A special shout out to tonight's author, Jordan. He has a book online on Amazon.com that is currently for sale. His information will be in the description box down below. Now, it's time to get spooky. We started noticing the strangeness about halfway through our fishing expedition. A fishing boat is never a normal place to begin with. Everything is always tipping back and forth, sliding around, so it's easy to ignore when things get moved or when things disappear. But it started happening more and more, and it seemed odd to me. I decided to begin writing about the events in question to try to make sense of what was happening. What I came up with will likely be met by skepticism. They may even commit me. So I'll leave it here, just for the record, in case they ever try to sweep this under the rug. That's assuming I ever make it back. Like I said, about halfway through our journey, traversing the freezing waters of the Bering Sea, I began to feel as if I was being watched. When I was eating in the galley, rinsing off in the shower, but especially when I was in the cabin doing wheel watch at night. In the darkness of the small, creaky room, swaying back and forth, pitching to and from upon the backs of massive waves like rolling titans, it felt like eyes burning into the back of my head, always. I didn't tell the guys about it at first, but then I noticed they were feeling it too. The crew had taken on an odd and disquieted silence. There was no more good-natured barbs, no more pranks or jokes, the usual bullcrap. Talk about banging each other's sisters and mothers, loud farting and belching, and the ensuing hooting and hollering, laughing and jesting, all the things which men do when they were hundreds of miles away from the nearest woman. All those things were suddenly, strangely, absent. The captain noticed it too. At dinner one evening, he broke the silence and spoke quietly under his breath. He had insisted that night to put on some music and had turned it up loud. "You boys feel it too? The eyes on the backs of your heads?" He said it quietly, so that his words were buried by the music and barely audible to us. We all nodded in unison, and I found myself unsurprised. "What is it?" I asked.
"I don't know. I can't make any sense of it, but I can't keep ignoring it. I wasn't going to say anything at first because it was barely noticeable, but the food's been going missing too. Little things, box of mac and cheese here, a stick of butter there, but enough that I've started to notice. And before any of you say anything, I know it isn't you guys. We've been doing this together for long enough. I think I could fairly say I trust each and every one of you that much. If I'm wrong, speak up, but I don't think I'm wrong."
"Do we have enough food left for the rest of the trip?" the somewhat ample-bellied Chris asked, his eyes now wide with fear.
"There should be. Yeah, I mean, we could always eat some of those fish that we're catching if we have to, right?" We all snickered at that, nervously. "The bigger question is, how the hell did somebody get aboard out here in the middle of the bloody ocean? The water's freezing, for one thing. And for another, there ain't no place to hide. I checked the engine room, everywhere a man could conceivably fit to stow away. There's nothing. No signs of anyone. I can't make sense of it, but I know he's here somewhere, hiding in the damn walls for all I know." I shuddered at the thought of that, suddenly thinking back to the creaky noises in the cabin at night. Were those from the man, hiding in the walls, watching me? 2 days later, an entire day's worth of food was gone from the fridge. The cupboards were beginning to look bare as well.
"This is insane. How could one man eat so much food?" The captain whispered this to me under his breath. We had stopped bothering to put the music on for the whispering conversations. The feeling of someone watching us grew stronger by the day, never abating.
We all felt it, as if he was everywhere at once, whoever he was. How sure are we that it's just one man? I went up to the deck and found the rest of the crew toiling away up there. It was past noon, and we were all beginning to feel hungry. Part of me was worried how they would react to the news. The food for today is gone, I told them, looking each one of them in the eyes. Our friend has been raiding the cupboards again, and the fridge.
Dang it!
Mick threw the heavy line that he had in his arms to the deck, and the expertly wound loop went into disarray on the wet wooden floorboards.
You're behind this!
He stalked towards me, pointing his finger into my chest, digging it into my sternum painfully.
You've probably been eating it. I know it from the first time I laid eyes on you. You're weak. You should have never let this dang boy on the boat in the first place.
The man attacked me suddenly and without warning. His eyes were black as the sea at night and full of hate and loathing for me. He was holding my coveralls in his fists, and before I knew it, he had me over the side of the boat. The man was bigger than me and strong as hell. I felt my feet and lower half beginning to tip over the railing, as gravity threatened to take me toppling over the side. My entire body was nearly over the edge, and I was looking down at the water below me, freezing cold, deep and dark as eternity. The mist and waves splashed up in my face, shocking me with icy blasts of spray. That was when the rest of the crew pulled him off of me, grabbing onto me just as I was about to fall down into the icy water below.
What the hell are you doing, Mick? It's not him. He's been with us the whole time. The captain said it himself. There's somebody else on board. Bullcrap!
He spit at us, being held back by the other men. His eyes still looked strangely black to me, as if all the color had been drained from them.
It's him! Freaking Greenhorn! Can't take it! He's trying to get him to turn back so we'll all starve this year! Well, I ain't freaking going back! We're staying out on the water for as long as it takes.
I'm not Greenhorn, you turd. I've been working with you for the last 6 years.
Ha!
He started to laugh at that, saying I was and would always be. I would never be as good as them, as fast. I couldn't understand where all this was coming from. We had always gotten along, Mick and I. Sure, there was odd bar fights in town, but those were usually good-natured and could have happened with anyone. Whatever problems we had in the past, we both always apologized afterwards and brought each other a drink. This wasn't him talking. They pulled Mick away and locked him in the bunk room to cool off. 6 hours later, he was still screaming his head off, and the captain decided it was time to call a meeting to discuss our options.
There's two things we could do, obviously, said Captain John. We could work one man short, since Nick is no longer playing with the full deck, or we could head back to port, weigh in with what we got, lose a bunch of money on fuel, as well as a bunch of time, and get another guy from in town to come back out with us. Assuming that we could find somebody.
Right. I'm sure we could get someone, but how good they are is going to be questionable. Now, obviously, I'm going to make the call, but I'm open to input. You all are going to be the ones working shorthanded. You think you could handle it? We all nodded our agreement. If fishing was good, we could be done in a week. Working short would suck, but it would mean probably another month of work for the same amount of money if we went back to get a new man.
All right. We don't talk about this to anyone when we get back, got it? I'm the law out here, technically, but I don't want word getting out about this.
So we went back to our duties, one man down, short on food, now eating fish that we caught from the water to make up for lost meals. All the while, Mick was in his bunk room, strangely silent, no longer screaming and hollering, just quietly waiting, bidding his time. The next couple days were mostly uneventful. We went about our jobs without much talk, just silently doing our work and trying to forget about that crazed man inside. The captain tried to talk to him through the door, and his growing insanity was scaring all of us tremendously. He talked about the darkness mostly, and the depths, the cold ocean and the blackness of the deep, how he wanted to go there once he was full, but that he was still hungry. Mick's voice started to change. It began to sound like a deep baritone, lulling and hypnotic in its cadence and rhythm. We had to pull the captain away from the door at one point, as his hand began to reach for the latch at the door without his apparent knowledge. When we asked him about it afterwards, he said that he had done no such thing. He flashed a strange smile at me that night at dinner as well. The after image of that stayed in my mind and made it difficult to sleep that night. All I could think was, weren't his eyes light blue before? Now they looked darker, navy blue almost. Perhaps it was just the light, but my paranoia would not let me sleep. The next night, it was my turn to do wheel watch. Captain John called me up to the cabin and told me gruddily that he was going to bed. He was dead tired. I sat silently behind the wheel, trying not to fall asleep. It was exceedingly difficult as the hours went on. What awoke me was the noise, someone whispering to me from behind the walls.
Your friends.
What the hell? Who's there?
They will abandon you for me. So get used to the open waters.
My heart was hammering loudly in my chest. I called on the PA and woke everyone up, telling them to come to the cabin, that it was an emergency. They ran up to see me, smiles broad on their faces. Their eyes were now black as coal, shining dimly in the light of the cabin.
There! He's there! He's behind the wall, he said.
Yes. What did he say?
Captain John asked, no longer a hint of blue in his eyes. He laid a hand on my shoulder, and I realized it was wet. I saw the floor was soaked beneath his feet where each of them stood, drenching the carpet beneath them. They smelled of kelp and ocean water. Mick approached from behind them, and I realized they had unlocked the door to his bunk room. He appeared to be pouring sweat. His hair and clothes were drenched. It dripped off of his hands and onto the floor.
We need somebody to work the wheel, Jason,
he said wetly.
You're the man. He is hungry, and we must feed him.
I had no choice but to agree. My crewmates are his now. They are completely taken over by him, as they worked the nets and the lines while I watched the steering wheel, carefully not to anger him, our stowaway. It seems like it will take quite a while for him to be finally satisfied. He's eaten everything on the ship, including our catch for the season, leaving me starving and alone in the wheelhouse, waiting for this to one day be over. My only hope is that he's full before I run out of fuel. Whoa, that was pretty spooky, guys. Now, I've spent 4 years out at sea in the U.S. Navy, but have never ran across anything like this. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Share me with your friends, and again, like always, spread me like butter.